Well, good afternoon. 65 years ago, Bethe published his fundamental work on energy production in stars, where he wrote the combination of four protons and two electrons can occur essentially only in two ways. That is, the burning of protons through the PP chain or through the CNO cycle. In his calculations, initially he found that the CNO was dominating, but after refined measurements in the 50s, it was clarified that PP chains from models was expected to be much larger than CNO cycle contribution in energy. You may notice here that neutrinos were not written in this work. 40 years ago, Bacall and Davis wrote their fundamental papers on the theoretical and experiment fundaments on the first solar neutrino experiment, the Clarion experiment at Homestead. And John Bacall wrote only neutrinos with their extremely small interaction cross sections can enable us to see into the interior of a star and verify directly the hypothesis of nuclear energy generation in stars. So that's the starting point. In the last 40 years, many improvements and checks were done in the standard solar models and many refinements, but the fundamental results didn't change. And here is a well-known plot. This is the updated BPO4 analysis. Here is presented the neutrino flux of the PP the PP neutrino fluxes along the scale versus the energy. And here you can see how PP is the dominating source in flux next beryllium, and this is the also well-known boron neutrinos that had the highest energy with HEP. On top of this, also you can find the CNO predictions from the standard solar model. Those predictions are quite more uncertain, and we'll talk a bit more about that. And recently there was a detailed calculation of also CNO lines that come from the capture, from the electron capture on the excited states on the atoms. Sorry. In the meantime, of these refinements in the standard solar model calculations, there were several experiments. Homestead started in the late 60s. Gallium experiments in the early 90s. Camiocandian, super Camiocandian, late 80s and late 90s. And SNOW, as we know, just after Neutrino 2000 in Sudbury. And these experiments are summarized in just these arrows, where show what is the energy range that they measure, above around 5 MeVs, chlorine with a threshold at 0.86 MeVs or gallium at 0.23. And I just show here that the flux that has been measured directly in the sense that the neutrino energy has been measured through, well, convolved through the recall electron by electron scattering or captured by a charge current reaction, only that this is the flux that has been measured and that we know about that. From the others, well, this is what we call inclusive and exclusive. So that means from the others, what we know is just the integrated flux from all these contributions. In the meantime, there was theoretical work to understand what was happening, and I selected these three, I think, fundamental works that led to the era of the large mixing angle in solar neutrino oscillations, where vacuum oscillations were explicitly written as a oscillation survival probability. Matter effects were included and explicitly said that should affect neutrino oscillations. And then the adiabatic transitions were written expressly. And if you look at the MSW plot or MS plot that was written there, part of the LMA now present solution is there. So all this led to our understanding of LMA, where at low energies is fundamentally vacuum oscillations, average, so we don't see any track of the delta M square. Here I explicitly write the three neutrino probability, survival probability, and the matter effects tell us when we turn from the vacuum transitions to the adiabatic transitions, and this is given by this parameter theta. Different neutrino fluxes have this transition at different energies because they are produced in different regions in the inner part of the sun. I must also say that because here theta 1-3 plays or will play an important role for all the discussions that I will talk later, atmospheric plus K2K to tell us where is the high delta M squared plus Shaw to tell us the best bound on theta 1-3 is included in all the discussions, although I will not mention it anymore. It is important because this theta 1-3 dependence it allows us to have better constraints on some of the fluxes. So all that work of 40 years led us to this allowed region in tangent squared theta and delta M squared, where this region in particular is obtained allowing the fluxes free and luminosity constraint. I will talk a bit about that. And it predicts that Kamlan should observe something in the same region. That was our understanding of what Kamlan did in the first analysis. And because, well, there was an interesting conference to say something about what Kamlan could say, and Giorgio talked this morning, so I did the following estimation. Let's assume that they were hard, and they worked till the end of March. So I put a bit more days than they did. I assume for all the other things, the same parameters, efficiencies, and the same fiducial volume. So I have, instead of an increase of 4.7 times, just a 3 point something. So it's not far, the estimation. Not so far. I didn't have the spectrum, so I assume that it was the previous best fit. But the important thing, I track every week what happens with the reactors in Japan. That can be done if you are patient and you go and look on different web pages what is the present today power of the reactors. With all that, I made this estimation. That, well, essentially is telling us that still Kamlan and solar could not be compatible. Well, the solar that I will call standard in the sense that I'm assuming MSW, the LMA standard three neutrino oscillations. So, for example, this region that was mentioned that is this favor at 94, here in this simulation, I found 96 compared to this minimum. It's not a CPT, it's just that matter effects could be a bit different. Or that the sun could have some noise. So there are different non-CPT, so that means CPT conserving possibilities to prefer this and say that our understanding could be slightly modified. Well, all this kind of summary of the last more than 40 years maybe is that LMA is the new standard and must be included in any neutrino propagation analysis if you are looking for solar neutrino fluxes, etc. So I will not mention anything more about neutrino oscillations in many senses, but all this is hidden and is part of the extraction of fluxes that I will talk about. And then I go to the question of what we can learn from present neutrino experiments, and later what can we improve. So this will be some all fluxes free plus luminosity constraint situation before this Kamlan results and my simulation that, well, maybe it's not too far from what they will obtain. I still kept this tangent square theta 1-2, although it's linear, I agree with Giorgio. It's a kind of debate now what to do with this analysis, move to sine square theta or keep tangent square theta. It's not taught, well, the main two directions are, one is sine square theta is where the snow mostly is measuring, so it's more Gaussian. On the other hand, tangent square theta is just the ratio of two entries in the mixing matrix. So is just something that is independent on parametrization. So let me just give a brief summary of what is this luminosity constraint. It has been mentioned in previous talks. And, well, it's a basic, it's the basic assumption that is done in the standard solar models, and is that the luminosity comes from nuclear reactions. There are two more assumptions that is kinetic equilibrium for deuterium and helium-3, but essentially in this equation, this is measured, this is the total luminosity measured in photons, those are the fluxes of neutrinos, and the neutrino fluxes, and these coefficients are the energy provided by nuclear reactions related to the flux I. And this is essentially determined by nuclear masses. So it's something that is mostly independent on solar model details. That's an important statement. And just the simplest example is what happens with the nitrogen neutrinos. Well, in the capture of protons by carbon-12, we have this nitrogen-13 that beta and plus decays. And then we can relate that just the energy of this neutrino with the energy of this photon. The energy of this photon is this alpha, and it's essentially masses plus this energy that is easily computed. So here some small effects come from solar models, but on the whole expression, the effects are at this level, 1 in 10 to the 4. So this equation can be just written in this way, compactified, where PP and PEP are play the game together, and as well I will discuss more later, then we have here the beryllium neutrinos, and then here the pack of CNO neutrinos. I'm using this just normalization that all the fluxes that can be obtained from the analysis of the solar neutrino experiments are just normalized for convenience to the BPO4 predictions. So then results that we can obtain with present data of standard solar model predictions. First is the energy production in stars, that question that started in Bethe and has been flowing around for many years, is what happens with the PP versus CNO. And that is obtained, again, I stress, not using the standard solar model fluxes at all. There are very minor standard model dependencies that are where the neutrinos are produced, but they are at the level of less than 0.2%, and the energy distribution of the fluxes. That, unless they have a strong energy distortion that will be indicating any other fundamental problem, then they don't affect these results. So this is a 3 sigma, the level of CNO that we can have with present data. And as Carla stressed, that is given by, well, now we have control on neutrino oscillations, but this is coming from some bounds that we have in beryllium neutrinos and PP neutrinos and the luminosity constraint. So this is an important statement that PP chain has been confirmed as the dominant mechanism of energy neutrino energy generation in the sun. Well, we can learn about the PP cycle. And interestingly, dominated by this bound on beryllium neutrinos and through the luminosity constraint, the PP neutrinos. So they are inferred by neutrino, solar neutrino experiments and the luminosity constraint at the level of 2%, almost competitive with the 1% predicted or obtained in standard solar models. And here are boron neutrinos dominated by, well, given by super K and snow measurements. And with beryllium neutrinos, what we find is that the flux is very uncertain. At 1 sigma, well, can change. And if you move a bit longer, then it can be compatible with 0. So we need a beryllium neutrino experiment. That's a clear result from this analysis. So we don't have any control on what is happening with beryllium neutrinos. Also, we can say, well, forget luminosity constraint. And then we can try to infer the luminosity in neutrinos. This one that I wrote in the luminosity constraint equation, forget it. This is a variable now, and I obtain it inferred by neutrinos. So it's quite uncertain from present data. And if we remove luminosity constraint, it's clear that PP is not so constrained, as is obvious. And beryllium can go everywhere, and you see that the central value changes quite a lot. So, by the way, this idea of studying and comparing luminosity inferred by neutrinos with photon luminosity came in a discussion here in Collège de France when Fiorentini asked me, did you look at this? And I was skeptical, saying, well, this is not going to give anything interesting. We will see that it gives something interesting in future experiments. So thanks to his suggestion. So also the people have been looking at what we can learn about variations of the sun. So what happens if the sun is not quiet, it's just, it fluctuates. And some correlation lengths cannot be checked or studied or observed in helioseismology. So neutrinos can look at this. And essentially what they do is they degrade the conversion. So just looking at the survival probability, you can find what is going on. And present data at this time, this length scales from tens to several hundreds, they find that that should be smaller than 5% at this confidence level. You can find some discussions in these papers. Some other discussions are, well, we can do something more. And for example, we can estimate the temperature. This has been done. But the problem is that temperature is not a fundamental parameter. It's just a function that you obtain in the standard solar model calculations. So it's badly characterized by one parameter. And what happens is that, thank you, what happens is that you may find small variations in the standard solar models that obtain, that where the temperature is smaller at the core, but the flux is higher, so violating this rule. So it gives some indication, but it cannot be taken as a realistic measurement, I will say. The other question is, well, can we learn something about solar model inputs from these solar neutrino experiments? For example, has been discussed, what if we can obtain S17 from the bottom flux? Well, unfortunately, we don't have enough fluxes to do this inversion, because inversion introduces a lot of uncertainties due to other astrophysical factors of other in solar model inputs. So still, this is a thing, a question that cannot be answered. So let me just go briefly to what was the topic of my talk, that is, what we can learn from future solar neutrino experiments. And our answer is the roadmap has to be go from beryllium and after that PP neutrinos. Maybe others, it's important to have more other model experiments, but those two experiments should be realized. And I must say that PP here is almost the same as PEP, although I will discuss it at the end. So this is just to show how the isocontours of rates for beryllium experiments in electron scattering and charge carrying are essentially delta m square independent. So if they do something, they are affected by the mixing. If you want to say something, if you want to compare what solar neutrino experiments can do on standard solar models, we have to see what standard solar models can improve in the next few years. And standard solar models now are facing some two important problems. One is the uncertainty of the metallicity. And this is not uncertainties from the measurements, it's just systematics. The metallicity has been changing, going down and down in consecutive measurements by Asplund et al. And this number is much farther than 3 sigma from that number. So we don't know essentially where the metallicity is. Although still, this value is the one that is used in the BPO form. Second thing is this S114 that was mentioned in previous talks, that recent measurement by Luna is half the adopted value in 98. So, and this again is more than 3 sigma far from this adopted value. Well, maybe a bit less, depending if one takes asymmetric errors. So some other uncertainties are expected to improve or should improve if the standard solar models want to give better predictions. But what solar neutrino experiments can do? Well, let's start by what the beryllium electron scattering measurement can do. I'm using this central value, just a rate measurement, not using a spectrum or not using any other thing, and two characteristic precisions, 10 or 5%. Well, essentially, one of the things that we'll get from there, I should insist here that I'm using the standard 3D Neutrino LMA. If anything is on top of this LMA, those predictions could change the central values. But then my standard now is this 3D Neutrino LMA. So this is what is expected, and this is essentially the prediction. So the measurement goes to the extraction of this beryllium flux at this around 10% or 5%. What is essential of this measurement is that if luminosity constraint is right, then this infers or allows to infer the PP flux. And the PP flux at a level better than 1%. And it will be a flux clean, more precise than 1%, annually modulated, and very, very cheap. And that means that if we have a measurement of that flux in a consequent experiment, then we have a test of neutrino properties. And at that time, we don't know if some of our paradigm will change, but at least this is clear two-step procedure. And then in the second step, this P electron scattering rate, which we assume is, well, some central value measurement, and two characteristic, maybe hard work for experiments. But if that's the case, then we can go again at John's statement in 64 to see into the interior in the star and to check the hypothesis of nuclear energy generation. And we can just answer Fiorentini, whose question that is, what happens with these two experiments and the neutrino infer luminosity compared to the photon luminosity? And in that case, we can have 3 and 2% precision. So that means one can really, with neutrinos, see if nuclear reactions are the only source at this level of precision that powers the sun. Some other important magnitudes in the sun, for example, the path, the helium-3, helium-3 versus helium-3, helium-4, or a better improvement on CNO, but still not at the level of standard solar model predictions. I mentioned this is the roadmap, beryllium plus PP, but we have intermediate energies, and maybe that's the place to find for a neutrino, other neutrino properties. But they may need charge carrying and neutral carrying. Probably PP is the best in some sense because we obtain similar conclusions to PP experiments. It's a spectrum line. We rely on some robust prediction of standard models, that this is PP-PEP ratio. It's higher energy, but it requires a larger detector because of the flux order of magnitude smaller. A CNO experiment, if possible, could measure directly what is the contribution of this CNO luminosity and this ratio, that this is strong prediction of the standard solar models. And this high energy experiments, super K, hyper K, you know, they could constrain more and more these HEP neutrinos, and maybe more importantly, to look in some region where neutrinos are not expected. So my summary is 3 neutrino LMA is the newest standard and must be included, and was included in all the discussion that I talk about. PP chain is the dominant mechanism of energy generation in the sun, and that's driven by two very important experiments that were this chlorine and this gallium, that they discovered this problem. They introduced us to this interesting problem to talk about, that was solar neutrino oscillations. This is the roadmap. This is what I think should be the path to go and learn about the sun and maybe about solar neutrino properties. And luminosity inferred by neutrinos could be, after these two experiments, it would be the way to test energy generation in the sun. Let me finish with why perform low energy neutrino experiments for me. Well, we have to measure all these accessible fluxes. If that's the case, if they can be measured, now we can test the standard solar models at the level of inputs. So we can test if the S114 measured by Luna makes sense with the solar neutrino experiments. That will be really astonishing if we have enough solar neutrino fluxes. For many reasons, and probably this is a future step, is that solar neutrinos and heliosismology should play more and try to extract some more information of the standard solar models. It's the way to test neutrino physics in an environment that cannot be done here in the Earth. It's a bit farther. It's the solar environment. And for me, what is important, and this is what was this, I put this, what is the roadmap, is that we have a robust prediction with this for these beryllium plus PP experiments. Thank you very much.
Questions or comments, please? Yes.
So, excuse me, I would like to know why you don't include in the BPO4 model the new lunar measurement. So you include the beryllium proton gamma measurement, but you don't include the nitrogen proton gamma measurement. What okay. is the reason of that? Because if you include that, as I showed this morning, using the rate from the gallium experiment, you get much better limit on the luminosity, CNO luminosity of the sun. This is what I showed this morning.
Yeah. I was in your talk, I heard your talk. I agree that, well, first, this CNO, maybe I was not clear on that. All the predictions of luminosity of CNO on fluxes don't depend on predictions. So they are extracted from data. Nevertheless, you said something that when I mentioned the BPO4, S114 was used the standard or the previous, let's say, standard and not the new results, essentially by Luna. That's due to my collaborator in this case, that is John Bacall, is the one that worked BPO4. I was not part of it. He explicitly wrote and computed both cases, so BPO4, what happens with S114, and he gives detailed analysis of what happens with new metallicities, new S114, but I adopted what he at the end decided that for him is the standard, that is this BPO4, and for my comparison I use BPO4. But for me, BPO4 is something to divide to, it's just to scale and speak about numbers order one and not numbers order several orders of magnitude.
Yes.
I don't know.
Maybe I missed, but what value of sine squared theta 1.3 did you use when you were presenting these numbers?
Okay. I don't use one number. I use a set of numbers. I use a function that comes from the analysis of atmospheric plus K2K plus Shaw due to Michele Maltoni and Concha González García. And what happens is that you have to work all these results for several theta 1.3s. But they are not weighted equally. That's why I tried to stress it. Maybe I was not clear enough. It's not that I allowed some range. And I assume a uniform, constant distribution for all of them. No, they come from data, and they have a chi-square distribution. So those that are farther from the best fit, that is very close to zero, they have a higher chi-square, so they weight less. Sorry.
Yes, time for one final question.
Well, in your analysis with free fluxes, with or without luminosity constraint, you get a boron neutrino flux 0.88 plus or minus 0.04, which is 3 sigma below the standard solar model prediction. Can you comment on this discrepancy?
Yes. Well, first, this is a way of that one should be careful. I use only BPO4, the boron flux, to normalize. But if we want to compare fairly the inferred boron flux and the standard solar model boron flux, we have to put errors on both. So here is the boron flux that I estimate from solar neutrino data, not the model. So and I get this 0.88 and it's 3 sigma far from 1. But the standard solar model prediction is 1 plus minus 13%, I think, 23%. 23%. So that means that the one sigma overlap easily. So it's far from one from the experimental, so the experimental error, but the theoretical prediction includes, let's say, the experimental or the inferred range.
Okay, let's thank the speaker again. Thank you.